order of the agenda. I'd like to welcome some of the students from Da Vinci Arts Middle School in Portland to our committee hearing today. We're going to take care of some housekeeping issues in the first few minutes here. First up is SGR 202 that we are going to send sideways over to the Senate Rules Committee. So let me open a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 202. Senator Knope?
Yes, I move Senate Joint Resolution 202 to the Committee on Rules. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Senate Committee on Rules without recommendation as to passage.
Senator Knope moves SGR 202 without recommendation as passage to the Committee on Rules by prior reference. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the measure is referred to the Rules Committee. I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 1566. Administrator Donovan, if you could summarize the bill. I know we have an amendment that was wordsmithed and changed ever so slightly from the other day that we didn't have quite ready yet. So,
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 1566 declares state public policy to promote coordinated provisions of education, employment, and job training, assigns new duties to the State Workforce Investment Board, and abolishes regional workforce committees. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 3 amendments. These modify the Dash 2 amendments, which the committee heard at our last meeting. The Dash 3s change in partnership language to with other local workforce partners, and they describe appropriate labor market information activities. And it removes the requirement in the Dash 2s that local workforce investment boards use labor market information under ORS 657.730.
Okay. We're ready to go. Senator Knope.
Chair Hess, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1566, dated 2-12-14.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments, dated 2-12-14. Discussion? Seeing none, objection? Seeing none, amendment is adopted.
Chair Hess, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking final action on Senate Bill 1566 without the fiscal impact statement.
Senator Knope moves to suspend the rules for the purpose of taking action on Senate Bill 1566 without the fiscal impact statement. No discussion on this motion. Is there objection? None. So ordered.
Yep. Chair Hess, I move Senate Bill 1566 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 1566 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objection? Seeing none. The measure does move to the floor. Senator Knope, this is a jobs bill. We're down to you. Would you like to carry this?
I will carry this bill for you, sir.
Thank you.
I hope you do better than I did today.
All right. I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 1509. And if I could call Michael Mason, Danny from the governor's office, and Justin Martin up. Who do we have from the governor's office?
Yeah, there she is.
She's nervous. She'll be
fine. Okay. And we were looking for a middle ground this week on the mascot bill, and I wasn't certain we could get there, but thanks to you all, and a special thanks to the governor and his staff for playing a good, good faith role in this. I think we did find some middle ground. So, Danny, if you want to.
Chair Hass, members of the committees, my name is Danny Ledesma. I'm the Education Policy Advisor for the Governor. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill and the proposed amendments. As you know, the Governor has concerns about the use of Native American mascots and supports the ban. However, this week we were able to work with representatives from Oregon's federally recognized tribes and are encouraged by the amendment to this bill. The amendments provide a more narrowly tailored rule for exceptions that we wouldn't object to if the bill were passed as amended.
Okay. If one of you want to explain it from your perspective.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin. I'm here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I'm also a tribal member. And first off, just like to say thanks to the governor's office for sitting down and going through this with us. We are pleased with the outcome, and as you will see in the language, there's a couple things we're specifically pleased with. That is that The use of a mascot that represents, is associated with, or is significant to the Native American tribe is language we feel is very solid. The consultation aspect. We talked the other day about some of the lack of consultation in the past. We want to make sure to work well with the Board of Education, as we do work well with the state of Oregon, and we want to continue in that tradition. So we're pleased with that. We're pleased with having the ability in that front end of the rulemaking process to sit down with the Board of Education and really come up with what these agreements should look like and what those criteria will be on the front side. And then the other piece of language that we really like is that the board then must provide the agreement if we meet all those criteria. So we think we can work on the front side in a collaborative manner to come to an agreement on what those should look like. And then once we get that to that board level, those will be approved. So thank you for your efforts and your patience with this. And we look forward to a continued positive government-to-government relationship in the future of Oregon. And as I mentioned the other day, who better to actually sit down and work on these agreements than the actual federally recognized tribes who hold some of this imagery so near and dear to their hearts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mason.
Chair Hess and members of the Senate Education and Workforce Development Committee, my name is Michael Mason. I'm here on behalf of the Confederate Tribes of the Tsleil-Waututh Indians. And I concur with everything that my colleague Justin Martin has said. This is a bill that to some is baffling, to some is a nuisance, to some is very, very important. And some people realize how important this bill is. There, a few years back, 2005, I believe it was SJM 10, the Senate, or SJR 10, I should say, the Senate resolved that the government-to-government relationship that currently existed between the state and tribes really should be carried to the local government level as well. And this does that with school districts. We think it's a very important step forward. We think the consultation, as Justin said, is critical, as Senator Roblin, I think, commented, and others have commented over the course of working on this bill. A fundamental problem with the development of the rule that came out of the Board of Ed process, and I think I understand why the rule was adopted. Certainly the history of mascot use has been pretty awful. But I think the flaws in it come from a lack of consultation. And so this bill corrects that. And I want to be clear that a consultation process is a formal process. It's not merely 3 minutes in front of the Board of Ed providing testimony on behalf of a tribe, you know, the equal amount of time that any citizen with a concern voices. It's a more formal process. And it's the nine tribes. And I think that will be very helpful in the larger context of how we resolve some of the problems that tribal students are facing, both in curriculum development, which is critically important, and just a recognition that we need to talk about Native Americans as playing an important role in our state today, not simply 150 years ago, the time of Lewis and Clark and so forth. It's something that is a baffling, almost willful ignorance among the citizens of our state, not to know the role that various tribes have, not to know that there are tribes that in their county are the largest or second largest employer, not to know that there's a serious commitment to our natural resources. Salmon, I think people get that, but there are many other aspects of the creation that tribes play a critical role in protecting. And I think all of us can learn from that. I think students deserve to learn from that, the experience and the wisdom that's brought forth from the Native cultures. So, again, we think this is a very good step forward and look forward to working with the school districts and Board of Ed on this bill. On the assumption that you amend the bill and move it forward.
Well, the You know, much has been discussed about the so-called NCAA rules and the namesake provision, and the National Association of Indian Folks who were here on Tuesday urged us to go to that direction, and it feels like that's where this direction goes. Maybe one of you, just for sake of explain the hypothetical, how you see this working or playing out, at least your hope.
Well, Chairman, I would defer to the professional sports veteran on that issue.
Throw that ball.
I don't know about that. Thanks, Michael. Mr. Chair.
That's that right where he caught it.
Mr. Chair, I would say, one, we're looking forward to having those discussions with school districts. We've already had a lot of those discussions with those school districts. And as I mentioned the other day, we really want to utilize this opportunity, one, to talk about this issue, get that ironed out, but then, two, to move forward. And I shared with you last week a report that shows how our tribal youth are doing throughout the state, and those numbers were not very good. So we need to really shift the focus of what we're looking at today, get those agreements in place, start to have that dialogue, and then really turn the corner and look at how can we better educate our tribal youth in the future. Also, while we're doing that, how can we also increase the educational opportunities for those other students, all of Oregonians, who are in those schools with those tribal students. And if we show and share why tribal governments exist, why we're such a huge part of the fabric of Oregon, I think it ends up ultimately creating better communities, creating better relationships at the local level, state level, and beyond. And to us, that's an exciting opportunity that we really look forward to having those dialogues in the near future.
Senator
Cruz.
No question, just a comment first. Thank you from me to the governor's office for being willing to work to find solution on this. And so thank you very much. And I will tell that to the governor next time I see him personally. And to my friends in the tribes for actually coming in a roundabout way, I think, to the place we all wanted to be. But I think what this agreement in this form does is emphasize and further demonstrates what we have been moving towards as far as government-to-government relationships, and that's getting this back to the tribes and the school districts, which has already happened, but this will further emphasize that. And the other thing I want to say, Mr. Chair, a kind of a sidebar on this, because Justin was talking about education, and I think we have a commitment now to look at the way we do education in the state of Oregon, especially education relative to the history of the state, because I think that component is woefully lacking in what the real story of Oregon is. And so I'm excited about looking forward to how we get the true story of Oregon into the schools. You know, Mr. Chair, 18 years ago, before I came into this building, I knew there was a tribe in Douglas County. You know, did not know much more than that. In these last 18 years, my relationship with the Cow Creeks and other tribes has totally enriched my experience in this building, and the cooperation we have had on so many things is beyond belief. So it's not necessarily the fact that that kids don't care. They aren't told. Okay. And you know, you got to point these things out. And so I think over the course of the next few years, because you do have a pilot going now, that we can maybe do some enhancement in the way we teach the history of the state that will benefit all students in the state.
Further questions? Thank you, and I echo those sentiments. Yeah, grateful to all of you who worked in good faith to come up with this agreement.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
we're you. In work session, Senator Knope, with the Dash 2s.
Chair House, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 1509, dated 2/13/14.
Senator Knope moves for Dash to adopt the Dash 2s, dated 2/13/14. Discussion? Objections? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair House, I move to Senate Bill 1509 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 1509 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 1509 as amended moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate, and Senator Cruz will be the carrier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Hoping he does better this time.
I will. I will. There's a few T's have been crossed that I think will help everybody's comfort level at this point. So.
I want to open up a public hearing and a possible work session on Senate Bill 1574. Senator Betsy Close is sponsoring this bill, and she is here with us. The bill has been or will be replaced by her amendment, and she will speak to that amendment. We'll let you go for it, and I don't know if you brought a team with you or just you.
Just me.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair Haas, members of the committee. You may remember 1574 from about a week ago, and I'm offering you the Dash 2 amendment, which is a gut and stuff.
Start off with your ID, Senator.
Excuse me?
Start off with your name and ID.
Who are you?
I'm Senator Betsy Close.
There you go.
There you go.
I thought I said that. Sorry. We realize that important work is being done to redesign the connection between high school and post-secondary education. This bill, while simple, will help move forward an important component of this redesign. It will allow students easier and earlier access to classes that count towards college. Many students do not see college as an option, allowing freshmen and sophomores the opportunity to receive college credit, which they currently cannot, might help some students change their mind and view advanced learning as more attainable. It will also help highly motivated students have more options. I noticed a recent survey on income levels of different student groups, age groups, and what they earn in salary, and it is really striking the difference between the college degrees and the high school graduation people. The research continues to point to the fact that accelerating the access of college credit is a key component for both high school and college graduation. Instead of spending money on a new task force, it makes sense to place this charge in the hands of the committee already doing this work, which is the Task Force on Accelerated Learning. So you may see in the Dash 2, there's just that one line there. We're adding in any grade from 9 through 12 for the opportunity to earn credit. I want you also to know I have a check with Legislative Fiscal on whether there have been any costs to the community colleges on this, because I don't want to increase their costs. They cannot give a definite answer, but they say, I'll just read this from Doug Wilson. He says, we think there are two types of students where dual credits are involved in one way or another. One, a student takes a class in a high school setting, then receives credit for that class when they're accepted into a post-secondary setting like community college. In this case, John says the community college receives some credit through the state formula, but far from counting a full-time student. Also, there may be agreements between individual school districts and individual community colleges for some students. He felt that the amount community colleges gets is roughly the same to cover costs there are that community colleges have in processing records and other administrative costs. Then the second type of student is the high school student sitting in the community college classroom and taking a class. The community college is getting credit for that student in the state formula, as well as tuition paid by the student or the K-12 district. In that sense, he or she is treated like any other community college student. So with that, I request that you adopt the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay. Committee, it turns out that I am on the Accelerated Learning Committee, and I don't want to speak for that task force, but I know that at the end of the year there will be a series of recommendations for the next legislative session with the hope of making dual credits more uniform and available in our public schools. And I know that this could well be one of the recommendations because we've discussed it. So to the extent that that would be one less thing that we have to do, for my money, this would be a positive direction. So, but again, I'm not speaking to the task force. Now, Hilda Roselli from the department is here, and I don't know if you wanted to add anything or just, but you're not screaming up and down in opposition to this, so I think that's a good sign. Any questions of Senator Close? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, it's a small change, but I think it's a positive change. So we're in work session, Senator Cadone.
Chair Hess, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 1574, dated February 12, 2014.
Senator Cadone moves the Dash 2s to Senate Bill 1574. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, the amendments adopted.
Chair Hess, I move Senate Bill 1574 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 1574 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 1574 as amended moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Senator Close will be the carrier.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you for that burst of activity and those first four bills. I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1554. We will stand at ease for just a moment.
Question ordinances for up to 10 years if at least 50% of the county by area is subject to certain ad valorem property tax statute assessments, or if the county has a population of less of 100,000 individuals or less. Provides that education funding protection ordinance may offer incentives to owners to withdraw land from certain conservation exceptions or special assessment programs, and disincentives for owner to sell the land into exempt ownership. It does a number of other things. The committee has been asked to address the Dash 1 amendments, which would also add an exception for transfers under devise as defined under probate law, so devisees, things like that. And I will allow the speakers to go into more detail.
Okay, Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 1554. And Mr. Chairman, in keeping with the proceedings of the day, I brought you a brownie. And I think that you might be able to divide it six ways,
only sugar
Mr. Chair.
Right?
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1554 is a fairly simple concept. It is designed to help protect and preserve the tax base of local communities. And one of the things that is happening on a weekly basis is that organizations, nonprofit, NGOs, and environmental organizations and sporting organizations find properties that have outstandingly remarkable values, and they want to see those values preserved, whether they're habitat or natural features or watershed. And to get those outstandingly remarkable values preserved, they utilize fundraising, nonprofit donations, government financing, leveraged financing. They'll find a willing seller and produce an opportunity for that seller, possibly through restructuring or tax structuring, to sell the property to a nonprofit and net more than they would if they sold it to another producer. Which is wonderful for the seller, and it accomplishes the goal of the NGO or the public entity. But one of the downsides is it takes the land out of production in most cases, and the tax base is reduced. So after decades of those sorts of strategies playing out in rural landscapes, what we find is all of the taxing districts are losing their ability to be sustainable. The tax burden falls more heavily on those folks that remain in the tax base to pay those taxes. But the greater loss is the loss of production. So if it's ranch land or farmland that's being converted to the public benefit, the production of that property drops zero, effectively, for the commodity value, and those dollars that would have normally circulated through the community are lost. And when I look at the unemployment rates in our communities and the poverty rate, our per capita income is approximately half the state's per capita income in most of District 30. Basically, colleagues, we've got a problem, not with the idea of protecting outstandingly remarkable values and not even with the conversion of private land to public land. And certainly, we don't want to interfere with the ability of a person to sell. The problem is when we're losing that tax base, we're also losing the production. So the solution is not to prevent those transfers, but to structure those in such a way that the value of the transfer, the value of the land going off the tax rolls and out of production, is replaced by the release of public land that's owned either by an NGO or a nonprofit organization or by a federal or a state agency back to the tax roll. So it amounts to a no-net loss of the tax base, but it's also a no-net loss of the productive capacity of the community. What you're really doing is allowing folks to make better selections and sort of trade the outstandingly remarkable value that needs to be protected for a piece of productive land that's locked up in the public land ownership base, and making it possible for us to continue to have a sustainable community a sustainable school district, a sustainable hospital district, and to pay for public safety services. So the bill before you doesn't require anybody to do anything. But it allows communities that have less than 100,000 population or more than 50% of their land base in public ownership, it would allow them to adopt an ordinance that simply says if you want to convert private land to public ownership, you have to structure that transaction in a way that produces a release of an equal amount or equal value of land back into the production base. So, as in some of the most recent transfers that we've seen through exchanges with multiple parties, we're simply saying one of those multiple parties would be some public landowner who is willing to let go of a piece of ground that's perhaps less meaningful to them to save and protect a piece of ground with more outstandingly remarkable values. And in that way, it's going to cause our public land managers to choose the highest and best for protection and release some of the lower outstandingly remarkable value, but land that could be perfectly useful for grazing, for agriculture, for wine growing, for other pursuits that would produce production revenue for that community. That's the bill. That's the concept before you. And colleagues, I think it's one that we should be thinking about very hard, putting into action. I know that of the counties, of the 36 counties of Oregon, 32 of them fit the definition of less than 100,000 or more than 50% public. Some that are pretty surprising. Clackamas County, for instance, falls into that category. And all of our communities are worried about protecting their tax base and their production base. So, colleagues, I'm asking you to move forward on the bill to give folks a new tool to empower the county commissioners in all of our counties to have a new and different kind of conversation with folks that are motivated by the highest values to protect outstandingly remarkable values. They'll have a new conversation with conservationists and a new conversation with folks that want to make sure that years from now we still have productive, sustainable communities economically. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Well, sir, I appreciate your interest in protecting tax bases, especially for education. You and I are on the same page in that regard. How would this work for practical purposes? Who would structure these deals? Who would make sure they work? Where are the people to do that? How would you envision that part of this working when it gets right down to brass tacks, especially in these tiny counties, tiny towns?
If the county chooses to adopt the ordinance, there would be a requirement for the transaction to be structured in such a way that a case can be made for equal value being released from the public land ownership base that's being preserved from the private land ownership base. So, in fact, it would make the county not a party to the transaction, but would give the county the ability to give final approval for a transaction, as in any zoning or planning effort that occurs at the county level. So we have a prototype. It's planning and zoning. It doesn't insinuate or insert the county into the transaction between the buyer and the seller, but it would allow the county to say you have to structure the transaction to protect the tax base.
Questions of Senator Ferrioli? Senator Beyer?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate very much the opportunity to bring this concept before you. I anticipate that some of the environmental organizations in the state will not appreciate this approach, but I guarantee you that it will catalyze a new set of conversations about sustainability at the community level that I think we've needed to have for decades. Thank you.
I think it's already doing that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And don't forget your brandy.
Okay. The governor's office is represented here. Gabriella, why don't you come forward and give us your perspective, please.
Chair, Chair Haas, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, I'm Gabriela Goldfarb, a Natural Resources Policy Advisor in Governor Kitzhaber's office, and I appreciate this opportunity to offer some brief thoughts about Senate Bill 1554. I'm here not to speak to the specifics of the legislation, but rather to the underlying concerns that Senator Farioli articulated, those concerns that we believe it seeks to address, including the balance between public and private land ownership in rural counties, impacts to the local tax base, and the use of farmland for non-farm purposes. These concerns were the focus of several bills during the 2013 session, and the governor is sensitive to those concerns, especially in counties where federal public lands already account for a lot of the land ownership. We have begun discussions with the relevant state agencies and stakeholders, and we'll be advancing a study group to look at trends in non-farm uses of Oregon farmland and the impact of such uses on agricultural values, on county revenues, and on other values. The study group effort will produce a report prior to the 2015 session, and we believe that this effort will develop a base of facts, of information that can really inform the potential policy discussions, that conversation, again, that Senator Farioli was referring to, relevant to non-farm uses of farmland, county tax base, and economic development in rural counties. And that's all I wanted to raise with you today. I wanted to thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So a study group. Commencing when and how?
As soon as session is over, maybe even sooner. We came out of last session with 23 work groups and study groups on our to-do list, and we've been systematically ginning them up and working our way through them, and it's definitely been something that remains a priority on our to-do list. We intend to consult with stakeholders, with the Farm Bureau, other folks that you're going to hear from here today, to scope that study and then have the agencies go and do the legwork, do the research, if you will, to assemble the facts. And so that's going to be Department of Agriculture, DLCD, ODF&W, OWEB, DOGAMI. I'm probably missing somebody in the alphabet soup, anybody else who's relevant to this conversation. And send them off to do that work, bring back that information. We will sit down with the stakeholders again at that point. And we just think that's going to be something that's really going to be helpful moving forward with this conversation to get those facts clarified.
Senator Beyer.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate what Senator Farioli is trying to do here, but I can see how the piece relating to government, other government acquisitions possibly could work, but I'm at a loss how you get around the equal taxation provisions when you're treating one private body to another. Have you looked at that, or are you looking at that at all in the work you're speaking of?
Chair Haas, Senator Beyer, members of the committee, I can't speak to the specifics of that bill, of the bill in that sense. And frankly, I'm here today, as you probably all know, Richard Whitman is the primary person who handles land use issues. He's in the Klamath negotiating, and so...
Gee, I wonder what he's doing down there.
I wonder. Let's all cross our fingers. We'd be happy to get back to you in response to that.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, take this opportunity. Gabriella, if you could help us find some more money for our port dredging, that would be helpful.
Good job.
Well, not bad. We've run into a little snag or two. So.
Actually, okay. I'm happy to get that back on my radar. I'll talk to Greg. I'm sure he's already on it. So.
Does anybody else have any issues they want to ask the governor's office?
I have enough
one issue. Mr. Chair, sometimes you have to take advantage of opportunities. So
right. Happy to hear the question.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, and I know we have some people who have come away from here. Gil Riddell and Judge Perry from Wheeler County. Speak on this bill. Yes, I know, but you're the chaperone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I have seated next to me Chris Perry, who is a Wheeler County judge, happened to be in town, and he had an experience in Wheeler County that relates directly to this, so I thought it would be informative to have him share that. I've given you my written testimony. It's on computer. There's also some hard copy. I'll go through it quickly. The senator sponsor has given you the nuts and bolts of it. I want to let you know that AOC supports it and that we appreciate that this is the county's decision, that the authority is granted to the county to choose to use this, and, which is particularly unique and appreciated, that the county has a choice to select the provisions that are in the bill to put into the ordinance that make policy sense for that county. We have counties that are overwhelmed by public lands, and I list some of them in the fourth paragraph. But add to public lands the wide array of state programs that grant property tax expenditures, and the tax base shrinks. Nevertheless, those lands require county services, and they're often expensive to provide, but we do it nonetheless, public safety and the like. And also note that the loss of property taxes for schools, Oregon must rely on your state general fund to fill the gap, and that draws state resources away from other critical needs. So we ask that you support this, and I would ask Judge Perry to relate his experience in this county.
Chair Hess, senators, I'm here as an example of what can happen when a county loses a large portion of its tax base.
Judge, start off with your name.
Oh, I'm Patrick C. Perry. I'm Wheeler County Judge. Sorry. Getting back to, I'm an example of what can happen to a county when it loses a large portion of its tax base. Back in the early 1990s, Wheeler County lost 40,000 acres of its private land tax base in a land exchange with the BLM. The lands that were exchanged were for lands outside of our county, so we lost the tax base in other counties.
What kind of land was it, if I may?
Timberlands outside of the county, but it was pretty much it was a Sutton Mountain land exchange, so it was mostly real rugged, rocky country in our county. But it was a very good grazing ranch. It was a ranch that supported, say, four families and agricultural production. They had hay fields and water rights out of the river, and a really good ranch. But when we lost that tax base, that was what brought on Wheeler County having to go and to its tax payers and get pass a tax base to increase their taxes. And we increased our taxes to, we're the second highest in the state of Oregon now. And the after effect of that is when we go to try to get somebody to come to our county to do start a business or start something up, we have such a high tax base now, it's hard to get any kind of a business to come into our county to do a startup business, to employ people. The other side of that is we had a Warm Springs tribe. They bought 30,000 acres of our county in a adjacent to this other piece of property that we lost the tax base on, but they've been a good neighbor. They've agreed to continue to pay their property taxes, and I got to commend them for, they probably don't have to, but they made an agreement where they're going to continue to do that. But we can't always have that surety with people when they come into our county and do these large tracts of ground. The effect of losing that tax base amounted to a deputy and a half-time deputy clerk as far as providing public services to the rest of my constituents in my county. So every time there's an effect like that it ripple effects out throughout the whole county. These public lands now were locked up. They were private lands managed by ranchers, and now they're public lands, and the general public now uses these lands, so it's added an extra amount of burden to my sheriff's department as far as when somebody gets in trouble or on its borders the John Day River, they call 911. 911 dispatches my sheriff to take care of any issues that come up on these lands. So it increased, it not only took from our tax base, but it increased the service needs on these lands. So there's other effects that I could go into, so I'll just stop and let you guys ask me any questions if you care to. So.
No, that was an excellent practical story about this problem. What was the property tax payment annually on that property you described?
I don't know what it was at that time, but like properties that are adjoining it right now are $35,000 to $40,000 a year. Is what we would gather off of them. For the most part, it goes by the land classification, but some of them marginal lands are valued at about $7 or $8 per 40 acres is the deferred tax on them. So,
Senator Beyer. Well, we appreciate you what you do down there and bringing that story to us. It was a compelling story. Good example. Thank you both.
Thank you, Chair.
Diane Daggett, the Trust for Public Land.
She's making the brownie.
Probably know who gets the brownie.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Diane Daggett. I currently serve as the Oregon State Director of the Trust for Public Land here in Oregon. The Trust for Public Land creates parks for people. We have been working to ensure that we are protecting land for people, ensuring healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Across the nation, the organization has been delivering on our mission for more than 42 years. Our history in Oregon is rich, and it includes the creation of important parks in urban areas, trails that provide access to nature, and the conservation of iconic landscapes such as the Columbia River Gorge. This is only possible because of deep relationships with private landowners, public agencies, and supportive stakeholder organizations. I do appear before you today to provide testimony in opposition to Senate Bill 1554. That said, I believe that our organization does share core values with the proponents of this legislation. It's clear that the problems which led to the proposed legislation are real. However, we don't believe this legislation would provide sufficient funds for the solution, and the proposed legislation is not aligned with conservation values nor the rights of private property owners. I assume that the reasons underlying this proposed legislation are directly aligned with shrinking county budgets and insufficient revenues for education. If that's accurate, I'm here to tell you that the Trust for Public Land shares these concerns for the health of rural Oregon. We, too, want to see abundant education opportunities and strong county government services. We also want rural Oregon to have healthy working lands, thriving economies, adequate health care, diverse economies with strong recreation opportunities, as well as healthy ecosystems. In fact, that's our vision for the future of all of Oregon in its entirety. I'm a fourth-generation rancher from Wallowa County, Oregon, and I still own property there, although I currently reside in Portland. I raised four children on the family ranch and while building a cattle herd. In addition, I worked with the local community to create a nonprofit organization, Wallowa Resources, to provide leadership in this public lands county as the timber wars began in the early 90s. 58% of Wallowa County is publicly owned and managed by the USDA Forest Service. Reduced timber harvest meant less money for county schools and roads. My children were some of the first to suffer from reduced education opportunities, to attend school 4 days a week instead of five, as schools struggled for revenue-saving measures. So I understand the issues that I believe are behind this proposed legislation. However, the provisions of Senate Bill 1554 are not aligned with the level of need for county government stability, rural prosperity, and sufficient funds for education. In addition, if enacted, these provisions would constrain important conservation efforts and could preclude private property owners the right to use tax benefits that might enable them to maintain ownership of their lands. Our experience tells us that conservation is an important tool to assist landowners in maintaining ownership of their land. One project to highlight is the Zena Forest in Polk County. In partnership with a local landowner and other stakeholders, the Trust for Public Land was successful in conserving important forest lands in family ownership. The issues facing rural Oregon are real, and they are important. But the solutions need to be aligned with the real needs and not be counter to conservation or private property owner rights. The Trust for Public Land would like to participate in proactive conversations that stand to create solutions that more closely align with the needs of rural Oregon. I urge you to consider this testimony in opposition to Senate Bill 1554, and I stand ready to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions, panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Green, OSBA.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jim Green, representing the Oregon School Boards Association, here today in support of Senate Bill 1554. And I recognize the prior testifier's commitment to preserving our lands, and this is not a judgment about setting aside conservation lands, setting aside state parks. This is truly an issue of when you take property tax off the rolls, you're taking away school funding. And you all know how our school funding formula works. If you do it in Wallowa County or Wheeler County, it affects students across the state because it's made up by the state school fund when you take those property tax dollars off. I would encourage the governor's office to look broader than just the study group they're talking about. I hope it's not just focused on non-farm usage of farmland. I hope it truly looks at what we're talking about when we take property taxes and off the rolls and what it means to schools and other vital government services. Oregon School Boards Association stands willing to serve on that study group to help understand what we're doing when we do this. It's not a values judgment, but we need to realize in all instances, whether it's in this bill or you're talking about urban renewal or strategic improvement projects, when you take property tax dollars off the rolls, it does impact school funding across the state. It's not just in that county, in that school district. I think this bill provides a unique opportunity for counties to work together with their school districts. We've done that prior under the Secure Rural Schools Act at the federal level, and we have numerous lands across this state that fall into governmental hands that we don't have any ability to raise taxes off. I know Senator Roblin, Senator Cruz, the ONC lands in your area, and the federal forest lands in your area, Senator Beyer. Senator Knope has the same amount. And I know, Senator Hass, you have those issues up in Washington County. I think it's time to have a broader conversation about what we do and the policies we put in place that affect the funding of our vital governmental services, which includes the education of our boys and girls. I'm happy to answer any questions. Okay.
Appreciate that. Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to call up Tom Wolf, Michael Lang, and Kelly Beamer to come up once. And you know the rules. If you have written testimony, don't feel the need to read it to us. You can just supply it to the committee.
Chair Haas, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I've come here in many capacities. I come here representing a conservation group of 3,000 members here in Oregon and 160,000 nationwide who are the largest organized restoration watershed restoration group in the country. Our members across the nation spend hundreds and thousands of hours doing restoration on land that we have that for different watersheds. And one of the groups that we work with in close partnership are land trusts. Land trusts provide us with land that we can do work on. And for example, that I want to use is on Wychuse Creek in Central Oregon, working with the Deschutes Land Trust. We have done many projects on places like Camp Polk and the Wychuse Canyon where we've gone in and done restoration, planted trees, restored old meandering channels of streams and spend many hours working with the land trust, working with the landowners, and to protect the value of these great watersheds, yet make sure that the farmers still are allowed to carry on many of their traditional farming practices, whether it be ranching or farming. The second thing I want to come to is I was born in Wallowa County in Enterprise, and I grew up with a father who traveled from small school to small school as a football coach. So I lived in Wallowa, Pilot Rock, Seaside, Hood River, Astoria. We moved 9 times as a kid and got a lot of friends who are now ranchers and farmers who I still communicate with, still visit with, still hunt on their lands. And I talk to them all the time about that, and I know that they have concerns that are raised by this bill. As I will mention at the end, this is not the solution. SB 1554 is not the solution. And the second, the third point I want to make is that my wife is a school teacher, my father was a school teacher, my grandmother was a school teacher, my great-grandfather was a school teacher, 2 brothers are school teachers, 3 nephews, and a niece are school teachers. So I understand losing money on tax base really hurts the schools. As my dad once said before he passed in December, is Oregon is the Mississippi of the West at times. We need to figure out a way to better fund schools and make sure that they have tax bases. But I just want to conclude that for fish and wildlife value, for helping the counties and local farmers, for working with educators to make sure that we have enough funding for rural school districts, SB 1554 is not the answer. I suggest that we take the governor up on his work study group, that we meet in the different land trust groups, the counties, the educators, and meet and talk about a better solution than this, because I want all those things. I want fish and wildlife values. I want good schools. I want farmers to be compensated for and protected. I want counties to have money to do all their stuff, because as Representative Brad Witt once said, I'm a great Oregonian, and I love this state, I love the areas, and I just want what's best. Senate Bill 1554 is not what's best. We need to come up with a different solution. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Beamer. I am the Executive Director of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. We are a state association that represents 19 land trusts. Our mission is to serve and strengthen the land trust community of Oregon. I've submitted written comments, and I've also shared a book that I would like each member to have, which is a gift from one of our members, the Wetlands Conservancy. And I'll be referencing a story briefly in a few minutes in this book. The Coalition of Oregon Land Trust is very concerned about Senate Bill 1554. We're concerned that it erroneously assumes that conservation tax incentives and land acquisitions by public agencies are undermining education funding. We actually believe that if passed, Senate Bill 1554 will undermine private, voluntary land conservation, ultimately harming landowners and our communities, and actually increasing the state's dependence on regulation. I think that this bill has a few unintended consequences that are worth touching on. I first want to talk a little bit about land trusts. Land trusts are organizations that work with private, willing landowners to arrange conservation easements and acquisitions that maintain working farms and ranches, protect water quality, protect habitat, and preserve open lands in Oregon. I sincerely want to empathize with the issue at hand, which is the economic problems facing many of our rural counties addressing education funding, and land trusts are here to be partners in looking at the real solution to addressing that issue. In terms of a few unintended consequences, we believe that this legislation would limit landowner rights. Under Senate Bill 1554, a county could adopt an ordinance to limit the purchase of land by a state, county, or local government unless land of equivalent real market value is sold by the same government entity into taxable use. We're concerned that it the question around asking our governments if they're in the business of telling local landowners who they can and can't sell to. Land trusts use voluntary conservation incentives to help families stay on their land. You guys have received, the committee has received testimony from Mary Wall, who is a fourth generation rancher. I just want to point out on page 21 is the story of the Wall Family Ranch, which was established in 1874. I encourage you to just take some time to read through this book because it does give those personal stories of landowners throughout Oregon who have made this choice to voluntarily participate in easements with partnership with the land trust. And in Mrs. Wall's case, as you'll read in her testimony, she's actually found production on her ranch has increased fourfold since they've taken these measures. I also want to make note that many of our land trust members are taxpaying to the counties. I think it's important to recognize before this committee I made several calls, and they several have a practice of paying county taxes. And lastly, we really feel that if this legislation passed, it would have the unintended consequence of really putting a moratorium on important conservation transactions that we feel like result in public benefit. So just going back to the larger issue at hand, I think we heard earlier from the governor's office there are a lot of questions that are still yet to be answered. The land trust community is very interested in being at the table at the work group that was mentioned and wholeheartedly supports finding a solution. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Lang. I'm Conservation Director for Friends of the Columbia Gorge. Friends of the Columbia Gorge works to protect the scenic beauty and the natural and cultural heritage of the Columbia River Gorge area. We do that through public education. We do it through advocacy, but not very many people know. We've had a land trust for about 10 years. We do buy land from willing private sellers. We hold some of these properties. Other properties we sell to state or federal agencies to make it public land. Our lands are open to the public. We pay taxes on these lands. The taxes we pay vary by the property and the land uses associated with the property and its characteristics, but we do pay taxes. Just a little example of what we do. We own about 750 acres currently total that we hold in fee. We own a parcel outside of the town of Mosier, Oregon. It's about 45 acres. It adjoins a city park. And we have built a trail with the support of the city to hook into their city park. There's a charter school in Mosier. They don't have a lot of opportunities for science experiments. Their physical education program is outdoor recreation. So they use our land trust property for physical education at the charter school in Mosier. They also conduct science experiments on our property, particularly looking at biological diversity and the biota that's in a particular part of the property. It's very rich in resources. There's a real public benefit to the land that our land trust holds and acquires. We are respectfully opposed to Senate Bill 1554. It would cripple the ability of our land trust to function. It would cripple the local and the state programs that acquire lands for public use, for resource protection, and for public recreation. We recognize that there are concerns that are probably valid that underlie this bill. We're interested in finding more about those concerns and finding appropriate remedies that address those concerns. Our priorities are that we have healthy, functioning land trusts to protect places like the Columbia River Gorge for families and for future generations, that we have robust acquisition programs on the local, state, and federal level that allow agencies to buy land from willing sellers for the purposes of resource protection or for recreation. But we also support well-funded schools and a stable funding base for our schools. And I think we can do all of this together. We would approach taking a look at some of these concerns and some of the issues underlying this bill and finding the appropriate remedies. Unfortunately, this bill seems like perhaps a little bit of a blunt instrument that is being asked to be applied to a problem that requires a much more thoughtful approach. And we certainly would support that. If there's going to be a work group or a task force, Friends would be happy to participate with other important stakeholders. With that, I thank you for your time and for the ability to testify on this bill.
Thank you. There is no doubt that there's a public benefit to the lands that these groups acquire, but is there one thing that you could point to that would be at least a partial solution to the problem that was raised by Judge Perry in Wheeler County? And that's a very real problem, or a very valid concern, I think, in these small, low population counties with small tax bases. Is there one thing that you see out there that you could look at? Stumped you. Well, I guess that's the book.
If I may, Mr. Chair, again, I sense that there is a valid concern here, but I'm not prepared today to say specifically what the problem is and then to be able to offer a solution to that. So I certainly agree with your point here, and I think that we ought to take a closer look and identify specifically what the problems are, what are the issues, and then try to, as a community, craft the appropriate concerns for that. And that's why we're very interested in that.
Chair, I can help you identify the problem is taking land out of the tax base. So then now we need the solution.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Senator Cano.
Oh, it's not really a question, though.
We'll comment.
Oh, yeah, sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Senator Cruz has rightly identified the problem, which is taking land from, off of the tax rolls. And I know of nonprofits that I'm associated with that could, in fact, do that. But they choose not to because they care enough about the community and about schools and about services in those communities, and they pay the taxes anyway. And I would hope that people would start recognizing that when you live in a county, for instance, like Deschutes, that has 70% of its land or more, it's actually like 78%, owned by state, federal, municipal, county government, that taking more land off the tax rolls is detrimental to providing the services that are needed in order for people to survive. So while it might be nice to have another park or, these people that are doing good work and trying to preserve things, when people are not really surviving in the communities that they live in, that to me is the number one issue. So.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. And to the Senator's point, definitely hear the concern too, and we are aware of that as well. And as mentioned by some of the previous testimony in my own, our land trust does pay taxes on its property, again in varying rates as well. The problem with this bill is that it freezes the level of public lands and counties eligible for this bill that choose to adopt this ordinance at current levels. And again, I'm not sure that that's the right approach to address the problem that you're identifying, and we'd be interested in finding other approaches that really do target a solution there but also allow our land trust to function. So thank you.
Thank you, panel. I would call Mike Fries and L. Elkins to come up together, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Al Elkins. I'm representing the Oregon Hunters Association. We are an organization that puts in, on an annual basis, $250,000 a year for wildlife and habitat restoration projects with over 30,000 hours of volunteer hours of our members. When we took a look at this bill, our first one, impression was concerning conservation easements and what this bill would do to that. You've heard a lot of the talk already about conservation and in relation to this bill, so I won't go on to that. But we just believe that what's at stake here could be the future of cooperative wildlife management between local landowners and local county or state governments who would like to do something good and important for wildlife. And in closing, I would just like to add that we would like to be part of that study group that was talked about earlier. And one of the first things that we would like to get an answer to is how much wildlife managers use the tax exemption tool when working with private landowners to secure agreements to protect wildlife values. We tried to get an answer to that, but failed. So that would be one of the first questions we'd like to have answered. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That concludes my testimony.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mike Fries. I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau, and we support SB 1554. As the governor's office mentioned, there's a task force or a work group that's being comprised currently. That is, I think, partially as a result of years of legislation from brought forth from our members trying to solve the very issue of removing productive ag lands from private ownership into public ownership. And that has been, in fact, that's probably, I think, nationally, it's the number one issue for young farmers and ranchers. The availability of productive lands are actually shrinking when the farm base and farmers want to expand. And so it's become a real problem. It is a real problem. We thank the governor's office for putting this work group together. And this bill does something a little different than that, and it still impacts our members. And our members, by removing public lands or private lands from private ownership, impacts us in two ways. One, it removes productive ag land availability. So when an operation wants to expand or a young farmer and rancher wants to purchase a ranch or a farm, by reducing the supply, it does two things. One, it makes it more expensive, and two, it makes it harder to find. But the second is that our members rely on these very, very important services that that are dependent on the tax base. For instance, I grew up in southeastern Oregon, and many of the ranchers were on the school board. They were part of the city council. Or they were very involved with the rural fire department. And every time that land is taken off or out of production, it removes a family from the land, and it also removes critical dollars from the tax base. And both those things are critical for a community. I mean, I watched my community that I grew up in shrink from 400 people to 200 people. We lost a grocery store, which meant we drove 70 miles to get groceries. And these families, I mean, the removal of just a few families really can send a community in a downward spiral. So we think that this is a great compromise. One thing it does is it actually brings the county to the table when they have a very vested interest in the removal of these private lands. Right now, the removal of private lands does not allow the county to sit at the table. And that's quite unfortunate. And we're seeing this right now in Grant County, where Grant County is about to lose a 6,300-acre ranch to the state, and the county commission was not at the table to even negotiate some of the terms or how to minimize the impact to their local economy. So that's another significant issue.
Why is the state buying that land?
It will be turned into a state park. And there is an exchange. It's somewhat complicated, but it started with Abandoned Biota and Michael Kaiser Group on the coast, and they're exchanging some coastal lands. And in order to sweeten the pot, they had found a willing seller of a ranch in Grant County that will add that ranch to the deal. And so what has happened is an influential member on the coast has managed to find a willing seller in Grant County with, I think, roughly 64% public land to take a 6,300-acre ranch off of the tax rolls. And the county, unfortunately, was not at the table. So this really is a compromise. So my members have asked before, we don't want any lands going into public ownership. What this is saying is that that's fine. We won't stop that, but we need to figure out a way to mitigate those impacts. And this, in fact, I think, will bring the counties to the table and say, okay, how can we solve this problem that you will be impacted by? It's a great compromise. I know that there are some groups in here that are frustrated and uncomfortable with this, but we're really limited on the solutions we have legally.
I agree with that. In this case, let's just talk about this example. If you had this mechanism in place, it could have the county essentially putting the kibosh on that deal. So there's no state park, the ranch remains a ranch, and you know, you can argue that the potential public benefit there is lost.
Yes, okay, I agree with that, but it depends upon how you define public benefit, right? I mean, so the local public benefit is probably is not lost, right? It's preserved, where some others would say, well, the public benefit's the state's public benefit, and it is then lost. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying. Sure. So, and I can just keep it at that. Thank you so much for holding the hearing. I do think this is an incredibly important issue for our members. I look forward to working with the governor's office, to solve the one issue of how do we preserve very important farmlands, which do have a great impact to our state economy. And then there is that second question, which this bill tends to address, which is more of a local issue, and how do you allow the counties at the table to make sure that that their interests are protected, which at this point they are not. Thank you.
Questions? Okay, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Amanda Rich. And Sue Marshall and Elizabeth Howe. Don't come up, you guys are
here. Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I am the Director of State Government Relations for the Nature Conservancy in Oregon. With me today is Russ Hoflick, our Executive Director, and I have brought him up to answer any questions you may want to ask me. I do thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today on Senate Bill 1554. And as I've been listening to what I think has been a very robust and very important conversation that we've been having today, a lot of what I had to say has been said. But I will go ahead and state for the record, we completely understand and appreciate the goal of protecting the county tax base and protecting the ability of counties to serve their citizens. It's one of the reasons why we have the policy of paying taxes or paying payments in lieu of taxes on a majority of the properties that we own in Oregon, despite our status as a tax-exempt organization. The core problem that we have with Senate Bill 1554 is it seems to be based on the premise that on a county-by-county basis, keeping the status quo of additional conservation easements or state and local land ownership is going to solve the financial woes facing counties. And I think Diane Daggett so eloquently stated in her testimony, we don't think that this really is the solution. It might be a Band-Aid, but this is a, as you've heard today throughout the testimony, this is a very complex issue, this we do not believe Senate Bill 1554 is a solution to the problem. We are deeply concerned about the financial woes facing our counties. We're involved in many conversations around the state about alleviating rural poverty and looking at ways to try to create jobs and stabilize rural economies. And we think we must all continue to have those conversations, including the one that the governor's office is starting. And again, others that we are continuing to be engaged in. We have to continue to seek solutions, but this is not the answer. One of the questions that was raised earlier, if I may venture an answer, was a question about Senator Haas, about Wheeler County's issue and what is one of the solutions to that. And I'm going to let, if you will grant me leave, I will hand the microphone over to Russ and have him answer that question.
Thank you. Senator Haas, Chair Haas, members of the committee, I'm Russ Holflick, the Oregon Director of the Nature Conservancy, and I've had the honor of working with Senator Hatfield to address this exact type of issue in the past, and we're in a very unique period of time where, in fact, the state of Oregon can have a very unique conversation with our new chair of the Finance Committee in Washington, D.C., Senator Wyden, to address the problem at hand that you addressed here and all of you have expressed concern about, and that is the federal payment in lieu of tax policy. I remember working with the Cattlemen's Association. I remember working with the senator and his staff to try to equalize the payment in lieu of taxes to equal the tax base of the local counties, and he worked very hard to make sure that the federal government was making payments equal during the time that he was senator to the tax base of those properties prior to being placed into public ownership. That program has not kept up with the times, the needs of the counties, and it needs to be addressed. But this is a federal-state relationship conversation that needs to occur. The Association of Counties needs to be actively engaged in that conversation on a national level. But that is the place that the conversation really needs to occur if you're going to get to the scale of the challenge and the opportunity that is out there. The second place that you have to have a conversation and hasn't been addressed yet today, and that has to do with the economic value associated with placing these properties onto the tax into federal ownership. We have not calculated into the value set that you've had presentations on yet, the tourism benefits to the local communities associated with putting these properties into taxable ownership. You think about the Oregon coastal properties that the state park system has and what the benefits are to your local communities of having day-use parks and having bed and breakfasts and restaurants and hotels and motels visited by millions of people. In Cannon Beach alone, 1.4 million people are visiting Ocala State Park and spending taxable assets, employing people in local communities, vibrant businesses up and down that coastline can be thriving as a result of the adjoining state asset, federal asset, private nonprofit asset. Thank you.
That's an excellent point, Russ. I wanted to make it clear, though, that you understood. While we have an issue here, I think we'll work it out, but it should not take away from the fabulous work that the Nature Conservancy does and over the years through the generosity of your members and donors.
Thank you.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Sue Marshall. I'm here today representing the Tualatin Riverkeeper. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the Tualatin River, it's located in Washington and Clackamas counties. Tualatin Riverkeepers opposes Senate Bill 1554, and I would just like to say we very much appreciate the reasons behind this bill and to protect school funding and also county tax bases for all the important services that they provide the communities. We believe this bill, as it is written, pits one important public benefit against another important public benefit. The Tualatin Riverkeepers is concerned with water quality. The ability to permanently protect riparian areas, floodplains, stream corridors has been an important tool in the Tualatin Basin to protect and restore it. These are agreements that are entered into voluntarily by landowners, and we are very much appreciative for their cooperation in doing so. Now, I understand this bill would not apply to Washington County. It does apply to Clackamas County. The river flows through both counties. Both counties have spent a good deal of money in restoring the water quality in the Tualatin Basin, and I would say Washington County in particular, I think the dollar amount is into the billions to preserve this clean water, and it had been at one point considered the most polluted river in the state. So we've come a long way, and we wouldn't want to see inadvertently any undermining of protections that have been really very much a useful tool, and that all of that investment would be undermined related to what a downstream county can be doing. We, as has been mentioned by others, would be very interested in scoping if there's a work group that comes out of this, or there may be, it sounds like a current work group related to this, but when it comes to resource lands, we have particular concerns related to loss of wetlands and loss of floodplain capacity, so I think that should be in the mix as well. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel that's up here now?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just a comment, you know, as far as the parks are concerned and the tourism, you know, we're talking about the addition of low-wage jobs that clearly cannot compete in the economy with the jobs we've lost to timber and other actual industry that isn't created. I guess my frustration is, you know, I mean, if we're going to take this land and put it into trust, and if whatever organization has it, is paying taxes, it's kind of a wash. But too much of it is at some point in time kicked over to the government, and you're saying that that's essential. And I'm trying to figure out, if we've got 70% of a county already owned by the government, how another 5% is an essential add. It just makes no sense to me. That wasn't a question. That was a comment.
Thank you for coming. Thank you. Elizabeth Howe, why don't you come up for the last word?
And very good timing to talk about parks. My name is Elizabeth Howe. I represent the Oregon Recreation and Park Association. Our 800 members are parks and recreation professionals in special districts, cities, counties, and we have a great partner in state parks as well. So the only thing I may be able to add is, after all the great testimony, is that this bill would largely slow down and at least increase costs for park acquisition at every level. In particular, I spoke with some of our county parks directors earlier, and they're concerned about the application of this bill to foreclosed properties, because there's been some great deals made in counties like Douglas and Josephine where foreclosed properties have been able to be turned into park properties and have actually become more valuable to the community in that way. And so everything else has been said, so I'm happy to take questions if you have them.
Mr. Chair, you mentioned Douglas County, and I will let you know, and you should know, that Douglas County has a lot of county parks, and Douglas County is having trouble financing the parks. Okay, so, you know, how many more of those parks do we need that we can't afford to maintain?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, they did mention that.
Night Park is the perfect example.
Right? They, okay. They don't anticipate doing many park acquisitions soon. That's true.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I just want to thank everyone who testified here today and came down, Judge Perry from Wheeler County. And I think one of the problems we have in Oregon is that it's such a beautiful place. There's so many places that people want to preserve. And in some ways, we're lucky that we're not, you know, I don't want to get in trouble here, but this is Oregon. So we do have a lot at stake here, and I think there is a balance that everyone's after between competing public benefits, and I'm looking forward to this work group, but trying to see if we can find something in the coming year. So thank you all for your help on this one, and I really do support those of you with on both sides of this to join in the governor's work group and be part of the solution.
And don't forget the dredging money. Okay.
So with that, we are halfway through this session. Committee? Thank you.
That's an optimistic view, but.
And on that note, we will adjourn.
I think that's
do we have any bills yet?
Oh, we do?
Yeah. We're ready to go.